not.
Okay, well, I will take it that they've started the recording and we can start the meeting. I want to thank everybody for...
Sorry, Chief, have you checked with him?
Pardon me?
Have you checked with him that they've started the recording?
Yes, the recording...
Okay, thanks, sorry.
This is subgroup A, which is looking at roles, responsibilities, and requirements of the OPOC, the Operational Point of Contact, and the proposal that was supported by some members of the WHOIS task force. We're meeting in parallel, of course, with the other two subgroups for the first three-week period. And my understanding is that our role is really to solicit and kind of organize the proposals that may come forward to address the issues that we've been assigned to look at. We're not necessarily supposed to make a recommendation or evaluate the proposals, although I suppose if we are able to do that, that would be useful. But I think the main idea is to get some proposals, some ideas out on the table, along with the what the other subgroups are doing, so that there can be discussion by the full group. That's my understanding, anyway, of what our job would be. And what I hope we could cover today is first of all just making sure that everybody is in agreement on that scope of our work. Second, I had circulated a few, really just a few questions that may be useful for people in preparing proposals. And then, of course, we need to talk about our logistics and future meetings and any other organizational questions. As I understand it, once some of these connectivity problems that have been plaguing us today are cleared up, there will be a mailing list for this subgroup A. So,
absolutely, Stephen. I do apologize.
Well, it's beyond your control, and and once it's back under control, so we'll have a list, and we'll know exactly who, you know, we'll know who's on it, and we'll be able to discuss this amongst ourselves. And I do encourage people to use the list because, although Glenn and her colleagues are doing the best they can in terms of the timing of conference calls, I know it can't be convenient for everybody, and the more we can get done on the list focused on particular proposals and particular questions, you know, the better off we'll be. So, again, I would just encourage people to do that and to try to keep your posting to that list focused on the issues that are in front of us. Let me ask first if there are any questions about the assignment, the roles, responsibilities, and requirements, the three R's that we are asked to address. Okay. Hearing none, I will take that as an endorsement that as I've suggested, we're supposed to solicit COLA proposals in that area, not necessarily evaluate them. And then I had circulated this list of questions, which helped me at least in trying to think about what we would want to, and what would be the points and proposals that we would want to bring up. And I guess my thinking is that there might be a proposal that addresses only some of these questions and leaves some of them open. You wouldn't necessarily have to have a proposal that addressed all the questions is what I'm suggesting here. But the questions seem to fall into four main areas: the who question, the what question, the when question, and the how question. And put simply, the first question is, who is the OPOC? This is a new creature that would be created by the proposal that was considered by the task force. So it would be in line to talk about what are the qualifications of this entity, how would this entity identify itself, how would the registrar, what would be the relationship between this entity and the registrar or the registrant? Would there have to be some mechanism for making sure that a registrant had obtained the consent of the OPOC before the registrant listed the OPOC? in the who is data and so forth. So it's really who is this creature and what is its relationship to the other parties here? Because as I understand the model, the name and contact information of the OPOC would be supplied by the registrant. That's about all we know based on the proposal, and this is what would need to be fleshed out. The second question is the what question. What issues is the OPOC required to handle? There's a reference to operational matters affecting the domain name. That has been a phrase that's been quite contentious over the life of the task force or variants of that phrase. And so one area that could be addressed by a proposal is to flesh out more specifically, give examples or describe in more detail what issues the OPOC is supposed to be able to resolve or pass on information in order to resolve, which is the definition of the OPOC from the proposal. The third I've called the when issues. I guess when isn't the only question, but probably one of the key questions is the time frame. If you have an OPOC and you know what that OPOC is supposed to handle, and someone makes an inquiry to the OPOC, how fast is the OPOC supposed to act, and are there time limits within which it must carry out its role to either resolve the matter or pass on information to resolve the matter? Obviously, there could be time frames at several steps in that process. And then finally is the how question. How would these responsibilities be enforced? What happens if they're not fulfilled? And I think that's obviously a key question, because we could come up with a system that we all think would work well, but if there's no mechanism for enforcing it and for doing something in the case in which it's not, people are not carrying out the responsibilities, then we have a problem. We do have a system that looks good on paper but doesn't really work in practice. So those, I don't know that those exhaust all, I'm sure those don't exhaust all the questions that people might have about the OPOC or areas where they might flesh out what the OPOC is supposed to do, but I throw that out as a starting point and just ask if people have other questions about the OPOC that they think would be appropriate for our subgroup to talk about.
Steve, this is Steve Delbianico. Can I get in the queue to give an answer?
Yes, go ahead, Steve. Anybody else want to get in the queue? Okay, Steve, go ahead.
The what, when, and how question. Before we answer those questions, I wanted to ask you what our assumptions should be about who has access to the data. I realize that's a different subgroup. It's subgroup B, Moulton Mueller's group, is looking at access. But if we assume that access is only law enforcement and not IP attorneys and anti-fraud elements of companies, then we'll have a different set of answers as to the what, when, and how in terms of responsibility.
Okay. I think that's a good question, and I'll provide my answer, and I'll let, obviously, anybody else can step in. My understanding is that we're talking about the information that is available, would be available to the general public. Everybody would have access to the name of the registrant, the province and country of the registrant, and this contact information on the OPOC, the OPOC's name, street address, email address, phone number, and so forth. And this would be publicly available. I think the assumption we should make is it would be publicly available just as who is now. So at least I think we're talking about what's available to everybody. I think what the other group is looking at is what are the circumstances, who should get access to more data and under what circumstances, and how would that work? But I think under the OPOC model, what we're talking about data that's accessible to everybody.
Sorry, that's helpful. Thank you.
Other comments or additional questions that we ought to be looking at? Okay. In that case, we'll assume that these are at least some of the questions that the subgroup is supposed to be discussing, and I would encourage people as they think through this further to circulate additional questions.
Excuse me, Rob Braden at your.
Hello.
Hello, Steve Frost here. Sorry for the interruption.
Okay. Okay, Ross, we just finished going through this list of questions that I had circulated about issues to be discussed by the subgroup, and we're inviting any further questions that people want to propose that would be within our scope.
Great. I have none, but I'm happy to listen.
Okay.
Thank you.
And then let's talk, I guess, unless there's other points on that, why don't we talk a little bit about the logistics. I think that the lifespan of this subgroup is supposed to be 3 weeks, which leads me to think that presumably the full group will get back together again on the fourth week, which is May 23rd. I'm not 100% sure of that, and maybe Glenn or Maria know, can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't know whether we have 3 weeks counting this meeting or 3 weeks after this meeting. Do you know when the full group is supposed to get back together again, Maria or Glenn?
Yes, Steve, and my understanding is we have 3 weeks including this meeting, so this tends as one of those 3 weeks.
Okay, so we need to finish up whatever we do and I guess report it back to the full group. Let's assume we have to report it back to the full group on May 23rd. I guess my suggestion is that we plan to have calls on each of the next two Wednesdays, the 9th and the 16th. As we were discussing earlier in the call, there's no way that the timing is going to be convenient for everyone, but I think there is, unless there is strong objection, I think we're likely to stay at this time frame because otherwise if we move, the other subgroups have to move and it becomes logistically quite complicated. So unless there's strong objection, I think we should assume that we will meet on the 9th and on the 16th at the same time, 11 Eastern and whatever it is in the time zone. And I believe we'll have the same call-in number. But I think what we need to do between calls is encourage people to circulate proposals that really address any or all of these questions about who is the OPOC, what issues is the OPOC to handle, when must the OPOC act, and how would the responsibilities be enforced. And again, I would emphasize that we don't necessarily need a proposal that addresses every one of these questions. We don't have to have a global proposal. You could have one that just addresses one or two of these questions, and then we can, hopefully that would fit together with other proposals. But I see that as our job over the next couple of weeks, and I think we can efficiently do that if we make good use of the list that will be in place in the next couple of days for our subgroup. Are there? I'd like to open the floor to any comments on what we're supposed to be doing or how we're supposed to do it, and any comments on the timing or logistics.
Steve, this is Steve DelBianco. The question would be, are you looking in this first couple of days to solicit independent proposals, or do you have one that we should put up as a straw man that we can all then work on?
I don't have one as a straw man, and if anyone does, they would be doing a great service by giving us a starting point.
The business constituency did publish official comments on the OPOC responsibilities, and I could put those into the mix. Do you think that would be helpful?
I don't recall exactly what, I mean, I'm not sure I've seen that, but I think, yes, I would certainly encourage you to put that forward. Matt, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I also want to make it clear that at this point in the process, we're not necessarily seeking proposals that have been endorsed by a constituency or endorsed by a broader group. Obviously, some people on this call represent constituencies. Others are independent observers. I don't think we should really, at this stage in the process, I just don't think it's realistic for somebody to come forward necessarily with a proposal that's been endorsed already by a group. So we're really brainstorming here. We're looking for ideas and suggestions, and I'm going to assume that everything is put forward by individuals in their individual capacity unless they say otherwise.
Stephen, this is Bertrand Lachapelle speaking. I take advantage of my joining this work at a relatively late stage, and after the whole discussion has been taking place within the GNSO, to ask just two very simple questions regarding what people had in mind in terms of type of actors and type of procedures when the whole discussion within the working group, with task force was taking place. For somebody who was arriving at a late stage, like I do, when I see the proposal for the OPOC, it is not exactly clear to me what kind of, it's actually your first question, but I'm wondering whether there is a clear understanding of what kind of actor an OPOC would be. And the second question, which is even more important, is would the function of this OPOC be to give the information or to forward a request for comment? And sorry for the naivety of the question, but it's just as I was arriving on this issue, I think it's important that I get it.
Thank you, Bertrand. I think those are very good questions, and I would certainly defer if Ross has any comment on it. Ross is one of the principal authors of the OPOC proposal, and he's probably in a position to answer those.
The question is, do I want to answer the question?
Well, you have the option not to.
let me make a comment first, Steve. I'm speaking on these in all of these working groups as a representative of TUCALS, not as a counselor or as a member of the registrar community or anything like that. So I've not consulted with, I'm not representing anyone else's point of view on this but ours. Our position has modified or has evolved slightly since, let's call it since around the time of Portugal, in that we're no longer, I would say, backing the operational point of contact as a contact point. And let me be very clear when I say that we still support the majority of that proposal, but in talking through the various stakeholders in Portugal, we've realized that what was initially presumed to be a technically elegant approach to a very, very small problem has turned into a major area of concern for a large number of stakeholders. And it's at this point, the question I was going to ask you as the chair was whether or not it was within scope to consider whether or not even creating the operational point of contact was appropriate or not, and whether or not simply continuing with administrative and technical contacts wouldn't be more appropriate. So that's why I would hesitate to answer that question that Bertrand was asking.
May I maybe reformulate it so that it's easier? What was the thinking when the discussion went on the OPOC, and what kind of typical type of person? But once again, there's no obligation to ask.
Certainly, I can, from a historical perspective, I can answer the question. When the proposal was first formulated by a group of 8 or 9 registrars at the Argentine meeting in Mar del Plata, the thinking at that point was that the administrative and technical contacts in a large number of cases performed overlapping functions, and that from a data management perspective, it would be more manageable and or elegant if those contact types were merged into a broader contact that we could call the operational point of contact. So it was presumed that the operational point of contact would assume the responsibilities of both the administrative and technical contacts. Does that help?
Okay, I see that better. Thanks.
Okay, is anybody else in the queue or wish to speak?
Yes, Steve, it's Maria here. Just a request, really, that if people are going to be putting proposals, that they would really try and follow quite closely the template that you set out with the questions of the who, what, when, and how. So, for example, with the DC proposal, it would be extremely useful if that was parked out to actually answer those questions rather than resending something that we've already had in a different format. And the reason I suggest that is because I think it's going to allow people on this group to make a direct comparison between proposals, and also it'll help us to gather them all together.
Okay. Thank you, Maria. Anybody else in the queue?
I wouldn't mind going back in the queue, Steve.
Okay, Ross.
My turn?
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you. The proposal that I'd like to put on the table for consideration, and I believe it's consistent with our working plan. I can be convinced that it isn't, but I will put it on the table nevertheless, is that we would consider not necessarily simply the operational point of contact, but whether or not it's possible to bring forward those administrative and technical contacts and perhaps refine the definition of those contacts and refine the kind of purpose, role, and scope of those existing mechanisms.
Okay. Well, I guess that raises two questions. One is your question of whether that's within our scope, and the other is you said at the outset that, again, speaking from the TUCAL's perspective,
yeah,
that you still support the majority of the OPOC proposal. So one question that I guess I would raise in response to your point is, do we assume that the information that's in WHOIS about registered name holder remains as it is today, or do we assume that it is reduced as the OPOC proposal would do?
I think to perhaps better answer the question, what we're seeking to, I'm looking for a compromise position on this. And in hearing the amount of concern around implementing a new contact type that would replace existing contact types, I realized that pushing forward with a new contact type at all costs would probably cost us the compromise position. So I'm fully prepared to withdraw our support for creating a new contact type and bringing forward the administrative and technical contacts. So for the purpose of this working group, we could probably limit the scope of our support to bringing forward the OPOC proposal, but using the admin and technical contacts.
Can you ask a question?
Yeah, go ahead. I should ask people to identify themselves, too, because, again, there's in terms of the transcription.
It's Steve Del Bianco, and Ross, I think the question is more to you. You indicated earlier that you were surprised by the number of stakeholders who had concerns with the OPOC. And is that what causes you to think that maybe we need to redivide the OPOC into its two component parts?
No, what I was surprised with, or perhaps what I started listening to, I'm not sure if it was a new concern or not, but what I had started hearing in Portugal, was that people were very concerned with replacing old with new. And I'm not particularly tied to replacing old with new, so if I don't care about it and everybody else does, then it's not something that I'm prepared to, it's not a hill that I need to capture, it's not something that I'm prepared to die for. So if that's the case, then in giving that up, what do we gain in terms of the compromise?
All right, so that I think it would be better for us not to necessarily divide OPOC back up into its constituent of admin and technical, but instead take a look at the differences between the OPOC and the registered name holder. Since the registered name holder, it could well be the person that we need to reach to ask so many key questions, but we see the OPOC as the gatekeeper to that information. As I'm reading the OPOC proposal, and if I can just quote the OPOC proposal, it says, the purpose of the operational point of contact is to resolve or reliably pass on data to resolve operational issues remaining to the domain name.
Yep.
And that answers Bertrand's question of whether they're going to answer the questions or just pass it on. It's just the proposal as it's written is either or. And then it says that any other obligations are basically between the OPOC and the registered name holder. So is it right for us in the e-commerce industry and intellectual property owners to think of the OPOC as the gatekeeper to the registered name holder?
I'm not going to defend the operational point of contact contact. I don't believe in it. So in terms of how you should think of it, I think that's really up to you. I'm proposing that we don't think about it. And rather than try and make new policy that we can't agree on in terms of that particular contact point, that we instead rely on the existing body policy and practice around the administrative and technical contacts. Certainly, the status quo in that area is, I believe, and anybody can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I believe to be much more broadly acceptable than pushing ahead with that operational point of contact type. So I can't tell you, I can't answer your question as to how you should consider that. It was never intended to be that gatekeeper, but it is being interpreted that way.
Okay, anybody else in the queue?
Steve, it's Maria here.
Go ahead.
I think we haven't really returned to the question of whether a move away from the OPOC is in scope for this subgroup. And I think that's something that will probably need to be discussed with a larger group and certainly go back to the initial intent of the GNSO Council when it did pass its resolution in this. Everyone can see that the work for this subgroup does not specifically mention OPOC, but I think we would need to have a reasonably affirmative confirmation that this is an avenue we could and should go down.
I'm sorry, this is Hope. Maria, you were going in and out, so it was a broken up. Can somebody else recap what she just said?
This is Steve. I heard Maria just say that we might have to go back to the larger group to find out whether what we're proposing or what Ross is proposing would be within scope of this subgroup. I think Maria also made another very important point, which was OPOC, that word doesn't appear. That's not a word, I guess. That acronym doesn't appear in the statement of the issues we're supposed to look at. So I guess one question I would have for Ross is whether, are you suggesting perhaps that we look, instead of looking at the roles, responsibilities, and requirements of the OPOC, we look at the roles, responsibilities, and requirements of the admin and tech contacts? Is that what you're suggesting?
That's my proposal, yes.
Okay. That's helpful to clarify that, because I think you're right that there's people are reasonably comfortable with how that admin and tech contact system works now, but I don't think there's ever been, we've sometimes referred to the phrase the job description. I don't think there's ever really been a very comprehensive job description of the admin or tech contacts. There is a minimal one in the transverse policy.
Right.
But
yeah, I think to the extent that that's unclear or unuseful or needs improvement or refinement, we should be talking about that, certainly. But I think it's a much more comfortable starting point for everyone than saying, not only are we going to redefine everything, but we're going to do it with a new set of contacts, right? I think it's a better starting point for us, absolutely.
But we would still answer the same four questions that Steve set out for us, whether we're speaking of the OPOC or the admin and technical content.
Stephen, this is Bertrand. May I just make a comment that I'm a bit confused at the way the discussion is going. Once again, I'm arriving from the outside, and having witnessed the discussions and the presentation in Lisbon on the OPOC proposal and the result of what I understand is a very lengthy process and very dense and almost tense process within the GNSO regarding the endorsement or non-endorsement of the OPOC proposal, I really understood that the whole working group, including the three subgroups, is about going further from the starting point and trying to define the OPOC role and the modalities for accessing non-accessible data and the distinction between the different categories of actors. What I'm a bit surprised is that I just got out of the previous conference call where a first remark was made that maybe the OPOC proposal was going a bit too far in the direction of protecting the privacy of the commercial interest, and then we're arriving at that subgroup. And if I understand well, and correct me if I'm wrong, the discussion that just took place it's almost as if the notion of OPAC itself were disappearing. So I'm a bit confused.
This is Robin. I'm with Bertrand on that. I'm a bit confused too. I thought we were pretty clear in what the scope of this subgroup was, and so I'm a little confused as how we can change that around at this point.
Anybody else in the queue? This is Steve. I think one thing that Maria said was that it's probably not within our, it's probably not our job to change our own assignment since we were assigned by the larger group. But I was just trying to clarify what Ross's suggestion was, which I think is that we basically look at roles, responsibilities, and requirements of the admin and tech contacts. I also want to point out, and Ross said this right at the outset, he's speaking for his company, not for the registrar constituency necessarily, and therefore, you know, I think that has to be borne in mind also. But I do think that if we are not to look at, you know, really at OPAC, then that does kind of call into question the whole direction of the working group, I think. And it may be that we need to get something more definitive from the constituencies, not just, you know, the registrar constituency, but all the constituencies as represented in the working group as to what our direction ought to be. That's just my thought about it anyway. And any further comments on that?
This is Steve DelBianco. I'm with you on that. I think we should proceed to answer the four questions about whatever entity or pair of entities is going to give us access to information about the registrar. And we can note, when we finish our answer to the four questions, we can note, as Ross said, that there's still some question as to whether we should consolidate admin and technical into OPAC or simply apply these job descriptions to both the admin and the technical. That almost becomes a footnote at the end. It doesn't distract us from the mission we have.
Sure. Yeah, and keeping in mind, my only motivation here is to at least start from a position personally where we're exploring what I view as areas of compromise versus areas of difference. And if that's not the will of the group, then that's also fine. You know, if there is consensus that the operational point of contact is achievable, then, you know, I'm happy to continue down that road. I just don't believe that it is.
Hello?
Okay. Oh. Yeah, go ahead. Who wants to speak?
No, I was just hearing a blank, and I was wondering whether the communication has been tried. As I'm speaking, this is Bertrand. Just one element. The first question I was asking was precisely my interrogation coming from the outside on whether the OPAC was somehow a filter. The way I understood it broadly was basically that there is a bunch of data that is available in some database somewhere that has been given. It can contain contacts and information about technical contact point, an administrative contact point, thousands of other contact points. My understanding, or the question I wanted to clarify, was whether the OPAC could be a sort of third-party filter, some external actor that would be just the intermediary for the back-and-forth transmission of information. And hence my question of whether this actor would be actually providing the data requested under certain circumstances or sending to the people who have the control over this data the request for information in a certain verifiable way. What I understand here is that it's basically, in one way or another, just the other name for an existing contact that is within the organization that is holding the domain or the person that has been designated on an individual basis by someone. Am I right in thinking that there was some sort of a layering in the concept, or am I mistaken?
Well, I think, Bertrand, in terms of the original formulation of the proposal, it was much more intended to, the operational point of contact was much more intended to function as in a manner similar to the way a building superintendent would, i.e. with no real authority but with capability. It certainly, I think Steve can probably fill out his view on this a little bit better than I could, but as I understand it, he's more looking, or there, you know, there's a counter view that that should be more of a port authority, which has a kind of jurisdiction or capability to act that's more mandated and defined than what the capabilities-based role would allow for.
Bertrand, this is Steve DelBianco. Think of it in a very concrete way. If they become aware that a phishing emails or a spam or denial of service attack is originating from a domain or passing through a domain, the need I have is for a very quick contact with somebody that can get some answers and remedy the situation. And when you put it in those contexts, the responsibilities, the authority that this person has to be evaluated, how quickly they can take action and represent the interests of the registrar. So qualifications is the first part of the first question that Steve Natale proposed, under who, i.e. qualifications. And that's one of the first things this group is going to have to wrestle with, is the OPOC qualified as an agent, as a legal agent of the registrant, or are they just, as you described, a pass-through mechanism?
Mm.
That's completely different ways of looking at it, and they'll have different implications for how quickly we can expect a satisfactory response to an immediate and urgent problem.
Mm-hmm. You know, put some further color on that, though, Steve. I wouldn't say that those that either of those are mutually exclusive situations. I think, from a practical perspective, oftentimes, for instance, the technical contact for TUCALS isn't qualified to act and would have to refer. In other instances, they would be qualified to act directly. So I'm not sure that it can be as I'm not sure that it's a binary situation.
Mm-hmm.
Or should be a binary situation anyway.
Should we consider having qualifications that have two different levels of responsibility depending upon the urgency of a request? That would take us into a bit of a complex way of answering Steve's simple four questions. But do you believe that the way we answer Steve's questions is contingent upon the nature of the request? You know, I mean, we're all systems people, right? And we do use case analysis.
Mm-hmm.
If we were to analyze this in a matrix, you put these questions there, and analyze the kinds of questions you're going to ask of an OPOC. Intellectual property, it could be about a technical problem, a duplicate IP address, it could be phishing or spam. If we list all those questions, it's possible that we'll come up with a different set of answers to each of these questions.
Yeah, I think I would want to broaden that exercise to, what are the range of questions we would ask of the contact types, regardless of whether it's an OPOC or an admin contact. But,
right.
I think it's a fair exercise. Sure.
Yeah, I think. Do you have anything you could start us off with a list of the top 10?
Do I? Oh, I'm not. See, I delegate my contact third party, so I don't know what kind of questions they're getting asked. I would actually reverse the question and say, what kind of questions are you asking? In other words, through the lowercase p prosecution of these various activities, what kind of questions do you need answers to? When you're looking for a spammer, what kind of questions are you asking? Or when you're looking to get information on an IP abuse situation, what kind of questions are you asking? That kind of stuff.
Steve, why don't you take a crack at the IP side of that?
Well, no, I just wanted to say that this really is one of the questions I listed. This is the second question. What issues is the OPOC required to handle? And there I think we do want to spell out what are the types of problems that, again, looking at the OPOC proposal and whether that person is called the OPOC or something else, there's a range of issues that are within that party's scope and perhaps things that are outside that party's scope. And I was trying to draw out what our proposals would be on whether it is appropriate to go to that person with a question related to a phishing attack or something like that, or is it appropriate to go to them for a consumer, for example, to go to them with a problem with non-fulfillment of an order that was placed on a website that resolves to a particular domain. And there's a lot of other examples. I think would be useful is for us to generate something of a list of what the types of issues are that could potentially fall into that person's lap.
I think that's a great idea. And Ross is saying that for some of those questions, the OPOC might only be a pass-through, and for some of those questions, we would want the OPOC to be the authoritative answer.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Bertrand has asked this question a couple of times, and I think the answer is both. You know, it's both a layered approach and one where the OPOC could actually act, and I think it may well depend on the type of issue involved.
Hey, this is Bertrand. Thanks very much for the different comments, because it's apparently clarifying a certain number of things. The range of issues and the kind of questions that are going to be asked of an OPOC would be a very, very useful exercise in this subgroup, because it would actually feed very nicely in the group following the discussions we had before, where basically the purpose of the request to access some data is a bit missing at the moment. The point that I see emerging is that from the comments, there are cases where there is a need to take some action in the end on the basis of a technical request, like there's something that is malfunctioning. That's one possibility. The second one is there's an action that has to be taken on a legal basis, and something has to be stopped or prevented or taken down or whatever. And the third category is that there has some information that has to be communicated to a third party regarding somebody who is in charge of a domain name or whatever. Those three different things, as was mentioned earlier, can be either acted upon by whatever it is called, an OPOC or else directly, or be just a transfer of information. But I'm wondering whether the three categories, like action on a technical basis, technical action on a technical basis, technical action on a legal basis, and transfer information back on the owner of a domain or the operator of a server or whatever, wouldn't be an interesting categorization.
Yeah, this is Steve. I think that would be useful to spell out and maybe think about in particular areas which is likeliest to be the case, whether we're asking them to do, the OPOC is being asked to do something in response to a technical issue, whether they're being asked to do something in response to a legal issue, or whether they are being asked basically to provide the requester with contact information for the registrant. I assume that's your third category.
Yes.
That they're basically saying, okay, here's the person that you need to go to. And I think that probably would be a useful exercise. Other comments? Or does anybody else want to be in the queue? Okay, let me suggest this. I think we've had Ross has kicked off a discussion that's raised a number of interesting issues here. I think the suggestion that Steve Del Bianco may have made is a good one, that we could probably just go ahead with the questions that are listed here or some variations on them, as Bertrand has perhaps suggested, without regard to whether that entity is called the OPOC or is called something else. I think if we assume that the rest of the OPOC proposal is in place, in other words, that some information about the registrant that's not currently made available, that is currently made available, is no longer made available, then we still have a question of the other party that's party or parties that are identified in the Who Is database that's available to the public. What are they supposed to? Who are they supposed to be? What are they supposed to do? When are they supposed to do it? And what happens if they don't do it? I think you could answer those questions either as to an OPOC or as to kind of an enhanced admin and technical contact, and probably about equally. So I think it strikes me that what we're talking about here remains within scope, even if there is, you know, even if Ross's viewpoint is in fact reflected by his constituency, and therefore we may end up at the end of the day without something called an OPOC. But I think it's still useful to go through these questions, and I think Bertrand has added an additional way of looking at them that could be very useful. That's my thinking, but I'd welcome anybody else's reactions.
Steve, this is Adam Scoville. Can I join the queue?
Yes, go ahead, Adam.
I think that it certainly helps us think a little bit outside of the box to think whether this would be the admin technical conduct will be one contact or two. And I think that, from my point of view, I think that within the sort of scope of this, I think that the point is that we need someone who can deal with these issues. And I'm a little more agnostic about, you know, whether that's one person for all kinds of issues, different kinds of people for different issues. Although one thing that arises is it would seem to me that the people who would act in these roles, it might be a little confusing if you weren't necessarily sure whether this was in your bucket, so to speak, or not, if you are admin versus technical. Although maybe, you know, it's not a perfect division and it's meant more just so that you have an idea, not who's, you know, responsible differently, but just that, you know, the technical contact may be a better person in whatever sense that word means to go to on some issues, and the admin contact may be a better person to go to on some other issues. One of the things that I think for, you know, the next couple of calls that this subgroup has that really is a concern that I think really bears more kind of talk about than it really has had so far is Steve's question D, and not to get too sort of legalistic, but one of my concerns is that no matter what responsibilities we give to this person or older person, that it may be very hard to enforce it, because this, and I'm hearing a lot of noise from someone's phone. I don't know if that can be corrected or not, but just thinking from a sense of where do these obligations come from, this OPOC has some sort of a relationship, whether it's contractual or perhaps if the OPOC is a member of the IT department for a corporation, it may be an employment relationship or whatever, but there's some sort of relationship between the OPOC and the registrant. But there isn't necessarily any relationship between the OPOC and either the registrar or ICANN or, you know, anyone else. So I'm sort of wondering how we would bring these obligations to bear on the OPOC. And who would then have the power to take action if the OPOC didn't fulfill this? So those are sort of flip sides of the same coin. As we know, for instance, the fact that third parties can take action if there's a trademark dispute about a domain arises in the UDRP context because of the fact that ICANN has dictated to the registrars, you must have these terms in your contract, and one of those terms is that the registrant consents to this dispute resolution process. Without any sort of agreement with the registrar, it seems to be very hard to have any place where you could set out, here's what the OPOC must do. And without that, this may be a meaningless sort of exercise because no one can make them do it. And, you know, you could imagine a situation where ICANN and the registrar dictated to the registrant that if you are going to use an OPOC or whatever, someone other than you as these contacts, you must oblige them to do X, Y, and Z. The problem is that doesn't really work because if you're in a situation where who you're really trying to get to, the end goal is that you want to get to the registrant, and the OPOC is a means to get to the registrant, but the OPOC doesn't do its job because it was never obliged to do that job, And therefore, the registrant is in breach of its obligations to the registrar that said, you know, if I use an OPOC, I will oblige them to do X, Y, and Z. Your remedy for breach of not having put those contract terms in place is against the very person who you're trying to use the OPOC to get to. So you only have a remedy against someone who you can't find in the first place. And I'm just worried and concerned that whatever the responsibilities are, there's no absolutely no way to force them to happen. And if we get into a situation where they're completely unenforceable, then where does that leave us?
Thank you, Adam. You raised some very good points there, and if you look at the status quo, the registrar has obligations to ICANN, and the registrar also has a contractual relationship with the registrant, but there isn't any direct relationship between the registrant and anybody else. So,
and it's also true, that's a good point, that there isn't necessarily a contract between the registrant and the admin or technical contact. So that's not necessarily unique to the current to the OPOC proposal, but it's true that it's a lot less of an issue when you, in fact, can get a hold of the registrant.
Well, that's right, and that's why I'm saying let's assume for the purposes of our subgroup that the information about the registrant that is currently available becomes less available or unavailable. For example, the address of the registrant, which under the OPOC proposal would no longer be publicly accessible. Let's assume that, and then let's look at the other information that would be publicly accessible and who is. What do we expect that person? Who do we expect that person to be? What do we expect that person to do? But regardless of which label we put on it, and we may have to. I mean, at some point, obviously, you do have to confront the question of what the label is. Is it still admin and tech, or is it OPOC, or is it something else? But I think we can probably get a lot of these issues out on the table without even resolving that question. Our time is almost up here, but is there anybody else that wants to be recognized to respond or to add on to what Adam has talked about or anything else?
Yeah, this is Hope Melman. I agree with Adam that the key is your D, because, you know, I really think that if we have all these other things defined and if it doesn't work and there's no way to enforce it, then we're, you know, in a worse situation, obviously, than we are in now, and that's the key. If we can't, we can set out all these other things, but if we don't really work on D and have some way to enforce it, you know, and have some sort of penalties or something to make sure that it works, then we're just, might as well just give up now. So I think that really is the key, D.
Okay. D is key.
D is key.
One of our conclusions.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, what I would suggest is this. Let's. I would encourage people to use the list. We will have our own subgroup list very shortly. And in the meantime, I guess you could send it to the full working group list. But use the list to try to flesh out some of these points. You know, I think everyone would agree that D is key. Do we have a proposal about how D ought to be handled? And similarly on these other questions, again, I would emphasize we are assuming everybody is putting these ideas forward for discussion on an individual basis. They're not binding a constituency or anything else at this point in the process. And secondly, I would encourage you, don't wait till you have a global solution. If D is key, put forward your ideas without addressing A, B, and C for the moment. So I think it will help us to get some of these matters out on the table. Our next call, I believe, will be at the same time on Wednesday, and I believe it will be the same call-in number, but you will be getting a notice, I'm sure, from Glenn about that. And I would encourage, if we have items for discussion, I would encourage people to try to put them forward, say, by the end of the day on Monday, so that everyone will have a little chance to look at them and think about them before our call on Wednesday. And after we get some of these in there, perhaps, you know, we may be able to focus our agenda a little bit more for next Wednesday. But I would encourage people to start putting some of these ideas forward in written form And then we can, I think, move the discussion forward.
Stephen, a question on that. Did you require me to, did you need anything further from me around the question of scope, or is that your action item now?
I'd be glad if you wanted to send something.
Okay.
I'd be glad to we could pass it along to the full group or just whatever seems, whatever's appropriate. But I would definitely encourage you to put that in writing, too.
Great. No problem.
All right. Anything else that people would like to raise? Okay. Thanks, everybody, and we'll talk same time next week.
Thank you.
Sorry, just before you go off, who was Alan? Alan, what is your surname?
Adam Scoville.
Oh, Alan Scoville. Thank you very much indeed.
And it's Adam rather than Alan.
Oh, it's Adam, A-D-A-M.
That's correct.
Thank you very much, Adam.
Okay. Thanks, everybody.
Cool. Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Hey, Glenn.